WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the
ABC
Civic Media
News,
app.
I'm Andy Field. Still no deal to raise the debt ceiling a day after Fitch Ratings put the U.S. on a negative watch.
We hope that not another one of the three credit rating agencies issues a warning, because this warning from Fitch should really renew the sense of urgency for lawmakers to come up with a deal.
ABC's Alexis Christophorus. President Biden nominating Air Force General C.Q. Brown to be the next Joint Chiefs of Staff chair. 18 years in prison for Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes for his role in the January 6th attack on the Capitol.
I anticipated much higher than an 18-year sentence. Not that I agree with the sentence, but I anticipated much more.
Defense Attorney James Lee Bright. President Biden saying the Supreme Court decision to limit the power of the EPA will take the country backward. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says Ukrainian pilots could begin training on the U.S.-made F-16 fighters in coming weeks. Head of the Wagner Group, the Russian private military contractor, saying his forces are pulling out of Bakhmut and handing control to the Russian military. This is ABC News. Today expected to be the busiest air travel day of the Memorial Day weekend. ABC's Alex Stone watching the flight boards for delayed and canceled flights.
It so far actually looks really good today. In the U.S., only 65 canceled flights. That's incredibly low, especially for a big getaway day. JFK Airport in New York is leading with the most canceled flights outbound, and it's only 5 flights. United is the airline with the most canceled flights today. United has 39 canceled flights anywhere in the world. So numbers are looking really good as the big crowds begin boarding flights.
The National Weather Service today released its forecast for the 2023 Atlantic hurricane season. NOAA Administrator Dr. Rick Spinrad says the coming season is expected to be on par with recent trends.
12 to 17 named storms with top winds of at least 39 miles per hour. Of these, 5 to 9 are forecast to become hurricanes with maximum winds of at least 74 miles per hour.
Andy Field, ABC News.
Hey folks, keep her moving to Civic Media every Saturday and Sunday at noon for the Cripescast with me, Charlie Behrens.
We've been out here all day. We've had 5 or 6 beers and only one fish.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinaire. Here's what you need to know. The 2025 NFL Draft awarded to Green Bay earlier this week comes with a price tag of $7.5 million. Now, Green Bay Republicans Representatives David Steffen and Senator Robert Coles are asking for $2 million in the next state budget to help cover a portion of that. The money would come in the form of a grant funded by the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation as part of the budget. It's estimated the event will generate some $94 million statewide, $20 million of that in Green Bay, and attract nearly 250,000 visitors. The number of deer in Wisconsin with chronic wasting disease up 12% last year compared to 2021. The DNR released the sampling results as part of an update on the disease on Wednesday. CWD attacks the brains of deer and other animals, causing drastic weight loss and eventually death. I'm Jane Matinaire. This is Civic Media News.
Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes. Good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hello? I'm a Marine.
No matter how you served.
My buddies from the Army are all gone now. I'm really alone.
No matter what you're going through.
I keep getting calls about the bills, and I'm trying to get a job. I feel so stuck.
We are here for you. If you or a veteran in your life is experiencing thoughts of suicide, dial 988, then press 1 to reach the Veterans Crisis Line.
Oh my gosh, it's more fun than a big block of Colby or cheddar. The Cripescast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
LocalMinnesota.com.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up, stand
up. They are going to become more brutal.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local, national, and Native news events all over Turtle Island. And as you know, Haley and Robert, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
You're right, Dega, and this portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Development Institute in Minneapolis.
I have the shirt on, and I've been really practicing, Robert.
Nice shirt, Robert.
Knack D.
Knack D. Good job.
Hey, you know what's really exciting, Robert? We're going to be on all hour, and we're going to really talk about a lot of things here. One of the things, how exciting this month has been in many, many different ways because of Indian Month here in Minnesota, but also what's happened at the Capitol here. And it's great to be a Minnesotan, and just like today, I saw you today at this great Ho-Chunk event, and one thing I want to scoop everybody on, Robert, and I know we've talked about this in a good way, is starting in June, like the first week in June, Native Roots Radio is going to be on at 5 p.m., and we're going to catch the end of rush hour. But what's exciting, too, is that we can really do the live events that are happening all over Turtle Island. And I know your group specifically, Robert, has so many things going on at the same time as the 6 o'clock hour was. So it's going to be fun to be out there live and doing live events. And I know if we're doing NACD things, you'll be there with your headphones on and helping me out there, too. So I'm really excited to just bring that up. And Haley and I are excited. We'll probably be doing some shows from Target Field to prior to the Minnesota Twins games. So we got a lot of fun things happening, and it's great to have a partner like you and somebody that's been on, I would say 4 years at least, you've been on our show, right, Robert?
It's been a long time, hasn't it?
Well, hey, it was great seeing you today. Let's start out a little bit today, recognizing Ho-Chunk, but also having a great little memorial for Marlene. And I know you were really, really close to her, and she's one of those Ho-Chunk warriors here in the Twin Cities and known all over Turtle Island. She passed away over a year ago and duly missed. And I'll tell you one thing, Robert, and I know you helped me with my campaign as legislator. So did Marlene. She was on the smoke signal phone all the time, promoting me in a good way.
She was whipping up those votes for you. And the event today, the Marlene we're talking about is Marlene White Rabbit Halgamo. She was a reverend at All Nations Church here in South Minneapolis, right off the American Indian Cultural Corridor. She was the first woman ever ordained in the Lutheran Church, or first Native woman ordained in the Lutheran Church. And she just was this amazing person. And, you know, she had this national network. She was very engaged locally. You heard from people today and since she's passed, just how much we valued her mentorship, her leadership. Today, Mike Gozzi of the American Indian Community Development Corporation made the point that that when Marlene asked you to do something, you just did it, and that she was able to amplify her impact that way. Mike Gozzi coined the phrase, Marlene's minions, and I'm very honored to consider myself amongst her minion. She understood how power worked. She understood that she could make things better for Native people by promoting other people into leadership. So I think, Robert, that I know she whipped up some votes for you in your election, your Ho-Chunk election, and that's just so Marlene, right? Making sure others were moving into leadership positions. And then she'll tell you exactly, she told you exactly what she wanted you to do, which would get you into those leadership positions. During my time on the Minneapolis City Council, we were incredibly strong allies.
Yeah.
I miss her.
Yeah, totally. And it was emotional at times today, too. Mm-hmm. She was one of the elders, and you know, we're old people here. We're not the elder status of somebody like Mike Gozzi or Marlene was. We're old Indians, but when they tell you to do something, you do something. And that's why I ran and retired from teaching, was running for a legislator of Ho-Chunk Nation, which District 4, which is everywhere but Wisconsin.
Right, and so impressive. And in the church, it's a fairly small and modest church. Just a few blocks off Franklin, the American Indian Cultural Corridor. And it's Marlene made it such a community center. You know, it doesn't have pews, so it doesn't feel hugely like a church. But we've all spent hours and hours there, different critical community meetings, feasts, honoring, celebrations. And I remember during my time on the city council, Marlene was committed to reactivating their fire. They have that beautiful circular fire pit just off the church. And so she would do that, and she would have someone tend the fire, and she would hold councils there, right? We'd sit in a circle when maybe there was a bad negative incident in the community, or there was some thorny problem we needed to think through, or even meet in celebration. But she really activated that fire and sitting in that circle there at the church. And so it was beautiful to see the fire going today.
Wow, really good point and good call. Marlene's husband was there, Harvey, who's always been incredibly supportive of her, but really he has not disappeared from the communities. I had a long talk with him about Minnesota and Ho-Chunk and things that he knows through Marlene and their journeys together about, you know, how we're connected and how other people are connected in a good way.
Yeah, it was great to see him there. I haven't seen him for a while. I follow him on Facebook, so I know he's active, and I know he's out and about in the community. And it was nice to see some of the people who maybe didn't make it to some of the like the Marlene's funeral and things stand up and give their experiences as well. Sandy Whitehawk being one of those people, and who was very close to her, and she spoke so beautifully today. Today is all funny, you know, some funny stuff about Marlene, too.
Yeah. Sandy, I met Sandy at Marlene's church because she has those great, especially pre-COVID, monthly adoption meetings. And as you know, Robin, right. I'm an adoptee. And just to get connected into the community, you know, and Marlene's part of it, too, for letting us use the church, you know. There right. You go, right?
It was so open. I'm wondering how many of us in the community actually has keys to that church. She would kind of distribute them so you could just go without bugging her. And Sandy Whitehawk is active and a board member in the National Boarding School Coalition, which is headquartered here, but of course works nationally. And so she is just dedicated to that cause and the work that she's doing. She was telling me today, it was interesting to hear, you know, she's an elder, a little older than us, and she was talking about how at this point in her life, she finally doesn't get triggered at these conferences and meetings about with boarding school survivors and about the trauma that our relatives faced in boarding schools. And she said that it's a more recent thing. It doesn't, she can enter into the conversation and help support others without getting triggered herself. And wow. And as Native folks know, those conversations are hard to have.
Right.
I was in a conversation today and all of a sudden I'm tearing up just talking right. about something from my own experience, you know, talking to non-Native people and having to explain to them. This stuff is painful. It's painful yeah. for us to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. Wow, we just went through a whole segment, Robert, talking about Marlene, and we got a lot more to talk about. Yeah, just a quick thing about Sandy. Sandy's husband's a stand-in on that great movie. Maybe we can talk a little bit about what we know about the Killers of the Flower Moon that's coming up here. Got a 9-minute standing ovation at Cannes Film Festival.
Right.
Sounds like it's going to be as good as we hoped.
Fingers crossed.
You're right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back with Robert Lilligren. Ho-wa.
Stay tuned.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by, stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
When it comes to mental health, connections with others can be a way forward. How do you reach out when you need someone? What do you do to support those who struggle? Whether you're struggling or know someone who struggles, see connections as comfort, hope, and joy. Like sending a text, sharing a moment, offering a hug, seeing an old friend, seeing your grandma. Together we can find ways to create a path forward. Visit cmentalhealth.org. Visit cmentalhealth.org. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Yeah, longtime sponsors of the show and what great work they do. I just have to give a quick shout out to anyone that's on Facebook or a Facebook friend of Robert Pilot. That's me. I have my birthday fundraiser for Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition. So we're not matching what we did last year. We had about $3,000 last year, and I'm getting close to $1,000. But, you know, anything you can give, $1, $5, would be just really great for this great organization here in the Twin Cities. That's known nationally. I'm here with Robert Lilligren, NACTI, CEO, White Earth Ojibwe relative, and just all-around groovy dude. Thank you so much, Robert, for coming on. And I just wanted to finish up my thought about Killers of the Flower Moon. You know, that's that book that, or it's a movie based on the book from 2017 that a series of murders that happened to the Osage Nation in the 1920s after they struck oil. And it's a true story, and the movie's probably based on a true story kind of things. I thought it was really interesting, just off topic on that movie, and they got a 9-minute standing ovation in Cannes, and they'll be coming out, I believe, in October for a short run in the theaters. And Robbie Robinson's doing the music, which is awesome. He's Native American. And then I just want to say this real quick thing about Lily Gladstone, who is one of the stars. She played on Reservation Dogs the auntie that was in jail, and one of my favorite Reservation Dogs, where Willie Jackson came and talked to her aunt, and then all these relatives showed up. She showed her how to pray. And, you know, she was all kind of frumpy in her prison attire, and I didn't recognize her right away. That's how good of an actor she is.
Right. Yeah. Impressive. And it's been really satisfying to watch the media coverage from Cannes, where it was premiered, the 9-minute ovation, as you said, to see Native folks walking the red carpet. I'm kind of a red carpet fan. So, and Cannes is the best one going, and lots of days. Right. So it's just a different vibe, right? And I can't wait to see the movie. I've read a little about it. I know that the storyline morphed from the novel, where it was sort of a mystery, right?
And right.
It was the original intent of the filmmakers to make it a mystery, but it's really grew into something much more about relationship, you know, and much more human.
Right. Yeah, and we like that. You know, Rotten Tomatoes right now has given it a 96%, and that's good enough for me, because that's people that have seen it that aren't professional inventory takers, so to speak, or critics. And so we always kind of lean towards Rotten Tomatoes, and that's probably early because it hasn't gone out too nationally, but the people who have seen it have given it a really good grade. And how can you not, with, to me, being a film buff and teaching film and video over the years, Martin Scorsese, Robert De Niro, and then Martin's latest minion, so to speak, with Leonardo DiCaprio, you know?
Yeah, and the Martin Scorsese, I mean, he's no kid, right? He's 80. This project took 6 or 7 years to put together. You know, he has to be very aware of what his, you know, outlooks, how many more films he's going to make in his life. And for him to dedicate that much time, that much attention, and be kind of that flexible around this story, I think, is amazing. And then, of course, that they put Native people up playing Native roles, go figure. And, you know, that they're really career-making kinds of roles for these folks.
I really feel like Standing Rock really opened the door for a lot of authors, a lot of Native things. We had, you know, Rutherford Falls as a TV show, Res Dogs after that, Prey the movie, the prequel to I Ain't Got Time to Bleed, what's the Predator. And all these things have been happening in a good way. And I feel like, and I could be mistaken, and I don't know how you feel about this, Robert, but a lot of it came from Standing Rock and being down in Standing Rock for that length of time and getting all the press, like you always talk about and we try to talk about here. We're still here.
Right. No, Standing Rock was pivotal, right? It was kind of a new starting line of the contemporary or the modern movement, and it showed us a lot, you know, that we could sort of go backward to go forward, you know, did unprecedented things there, and it will always be kind of a new high water mark for me, and you know, being there was a profound experience, really changed the way that I approach my work and my perspective, and this is a generational thing, right? And I don't know if we talked about this, but we've had an international documentary film crew hanging around the last few days, and they're putting together this story, and they're not quite sure what to write about, but they're looking at the Twin Cities metropolitan area and the history of activism and advocacy and the progress that's been made. And that's what I push on them. We're in this generational change here, where there's old farts like you and me, but then there are young people like Haley and others who were raised mm-hmm. with much more solid understandings of who they are as Native people, their languages, their cultures. They're on such firmer ground.
Right.
So when you see things like the progress that's been made since Standing Rock, you know, there's the really deliberate efforts to reclaim the Native narrative through reclaiming Native truth, and locally that's branded as We Are Still Here. Mm-hmm. And we're all kind of working from the same strategies. And then when it just shows the power, when we unite our voices and work together in an Indigenous and collaborative way, we can do anything.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
There's so many examples of that.
You know, I think we had kind of a renaissance, at least film-wise, in the 90s, you know, with Dancing with Kevin Costner and then Smoke Signals and, you know, those things. But it, other than Smoke Signals, I really feel like it was not led directly by Native people as it is now.
Right. It wasn't us telling our stories. And if you go back 20 years before that, and we're old enough to remember, you know, in the 70s, there was this little vogue more around performers like Cher, you know, really right. lifting up her negative. Wayne Newton, all of a sudden, he became very negative. And then you had legitimate performers like Buffy St. Marie and things that right. were there. But there was this little bit of vogue, and then it kind of went around. And then you're right. Then in the 90s, there were movies, but what's happening today, and like you said, since Standing Rock, is a whole different thing.
And that's a thing I'd like to talk about in the next segment when we get on there, is just how proud we are of our politicians. I mean, I talked about State Senator Mary Kunish came today and got a heck of an ovation, because I reminded the audience I was MC of the great work the trifecta's done here in Minnesota.
Yeah, unprecedented. So the trifecta that Robert's talking about is our governor's office, our state senate, and our state house are all under one party control. It happens to be our party, the Democratic Party, or Democratic Farmer Labor, as it's known here. And those guys went in, they said it. Their intent was to legislate with efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this piece going around from the governor's social media, Governor Waltz, around his whiteboard, you know, with his legislative priorities. Listen, it's done, 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 done. Mm-hmm. Every single one. And it just feels good to have a government that can get things done and mm-hmm. get things done in a good way.
Right. And it was hard for me to comprehend. And I know, Robert, you've been paying attention a lot more than I have to local politics. I did not ever see the stopgaps, or not the stopgaps, but how plugged up their government was 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And one of the government, right? I'm a representative on our Metropolitan Council. First Native person to serve on the Metropolitan Council. And they, what came out of the legislative session to support the transit that we operate, housing, a new quarter-cent sales tax for in the Metro for housing, the first sufficient dedicated transit funding ever. And wow. This has been a battle. Every year we go in, every year we kind of have to fight with all the other legislative priorities to get transit. There are certain administrations that have been very anti-transit. And in this session, with the help of a few key legislators like Senator Dibble and Representative Hornstein, they passed a chunk of what will now be called baseline transit funding. So baseline means it'll just automatically appear in the budget. We don't have to compete for it. And that is huge, especially for our people who use transit.
Well, I was just going to say before we break, Robert, I feel like Dibble, who's been around a long time and has been an advocate of many things that Wendy and I have been following over the years, you know, whether it's animal rights and things like that, and Hornstein, mm-hmm. they all need a blanket after this. They be given a blanket after this.
Good
this
idea.
Session.
That was always Marlene's vision, that we were better at recognizing and honoring people. She would hold these honoring feasts at her church, so that could be honoring Marlene as well by giving them blankets.
Well, let's talk about that off air, because I think that's something with those two warriors that have really supported our community for many, many, many years and still do. Hey, I'm here with Robert Lilligren.
Fox Valley, regional and state news and commentary for us to find common ground. Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Still no deal to raise the debt ceiling. A day after Fitch Ratings put the U.S. on a negative watch.
We hope that not another one of the three credit rating agencies issues a warning, because this warning from Fitch should really renew the sense of urgency for lawmakers to come up with a deal.
ABC's Alexis Christophorus. President Biden nominating Air Force General C.Q. Brown to be the next Joint Chiefs of Staff chair. 18 years in prison for Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes for his role in the January 6th attack on the Capitol.
I anticipated much higher than an 18-year sentence. Not that I agree with the sentence, but I anticipated much more.
Defense Attorney James Lee Bright. President Biden saying the Supreme Court decision to limit the power of the EPA will take the country backward. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says Ukrainian pilots could begin training on the U.S.-made F-16 fighters in coming weeks. Head of the Wagner Group, the Russian private military contractor, saying his forces are pulling out of Bakhmut and handing control to the Russian military. This is ABC News.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A new audit faults Wisconsin's Department of Health Services for mismanaging COVID-19 grants and the state's ventilator program. About a third of the grants the auditors reviewed lacked proof that applicants needed the money. Health Secretary Kirsten Johnson says her agency had to make decisions under highly unusual circumstances. The 2025 NFL Draft will be the biggest event ever held in Green Bay. Packers president Mark Murphy says the biggest worry is having enough hotel rooms.
Maybe having some cruise ships. And we've had some discussions also with Amtrak about running train service up from Milwaukee.
Another concern might be the weather in April. Murphy sounds like the NFL would actually be happy if it snows. In sports, the Brewers host San Francisco tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
For 30 years, Natural Lawn has taken an environmentally friendly approach to lawn care to feed your soil without unnecessary chemicals. Beat the summer rush and visit naturallawn.com.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Thank you, Haley. Yes, they do. And hey, I'm here with Robert Lilligren, and Wow, I just was listening to one of the ads, and Golden Valley Pride sounds like a big happenings that I did not know about.
Yeah, who knew? Who knew? I didn't know they had the highest per capita households of LGBT people, or that they had the first suburban pride. So, yeah, you learn something new every day listening to your show.
Well, I like to think of it as our show because, you know, I was trying to spit out the words that you were a white earth citizen, and I couldn't come up with the word citizen. But we like to call ourselves citizens as opposed to members because we are the citizens of our tribes. That was really interesting. Why don't we jump into the Clyde Belcourt Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative that has been one of the things that you've been working on, but other groups working in tandem and harmony together with the Capitol and the traction that that's gotten this past session.
Yeah, it's been really amazing. And just the evolution of how we got to where we are today is something that just delights me. And so we named it for Clyde Belcourt, our revered ancestor. Then it's the Urban Indian Legacy Initiative. And I haven't been in the leadership of this. I want to be really clear. I've been very supportive and involved. But it's young leaders like Marissa Cummings and Joe Hobart and Louise Manson who have been really moving it out. But it was a strategy to go to the legislature this year to get capital investment from the state into the urban Indian organization's facilities. And we have these aging facilities, many of us are barely safe maybe, and they need some definite capital infusion. And so there were, I think, 15 participating organizations. We put all of our needs in a document, and then working with lobbyists, we recruited elected senators and representatives to carry these bills. We had hearings that we appeared at and went through the process. It really elevated the profile of Native orgs and some of the needs in our communities. And it was fairly successful. I think maybe 5 of the projects that were on our list of the 15 were funded to some level. You know, that's not 100%, but it's something, right? And we're already meeting in a couple of weeks under the leadership of Marissa Cummings of Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center to start planning for the next session and how we'll go back and how we'll work together. And it's collaborative. It puts us in a posture where we're not competing with each other like the system wants us to do, you know, and to compete for resources and compete for service personnel. And instead, over the last maybe 7 years or so, the organizational leadership in the Twin Cities has been really deliberate about building ways to collaborate, to indigenize the way that we come together and throw off this colonized yoke that incentivizes us to view each other as enemies and competitors, that scarcity mentality, right? And embrace mentality of plenty. And it's just a joy to see.
It is. And it's funny that you said 7 years ago, because we were talking earlier about Standing Rock and the 7 fires, the 8 fires that left Standing Rock. And at the same time, you're talking about this major collaboration, and we're talking about a paradigm shift in many ways of how people picture us, but how we picture ourselves.
Right. That's exactly right. And it's important for us to picture ourselves in a different way. Right. And it's amazing how often in myself, or I work with these incredibly talented young Native professionals. And every so often something will just kind of percolate up that really comes from a perspective of scarcity or something a little more colonized. And I think, wow, we should know better. We should know better than this, but man, that can run kind of deep and strong. And so it's a constant awareness that we need to be building, and then to not succumb, right? Not to fall into those old patterns, but to keep embracing each other as collaborators, as relatives. And it is, it's a paradigm shift.
And I think too, that we can, and I don't mean this to be harsh, but we can call out or call on people when they aren't coming at us in a good way, I think better than we could prior to. And I, that's just like a feeling, again, with the paradigm shift. We started the show Native Roots Radio during Standing Rock, too. So that's something, you know, because of all the misinformation that was being sent out of there. And so it's kind of a starting point for me to really to see the whole community in a whole.
I think that's a beautiful perspective, Robert. And the idea of holding each other accountable, right? The, if you want to say, call out or just identifying when things aren't being authentic and things aren't being indigenous. And you're right. I think we're stronger now where those kinds of statements of accountability aren't just going to blow everything up. Right. Like maybe a few years ago, if someone got called out, that might be the end of a conversation. You can go into the next conversation. Instead, now we're having serious conversations, deliberations about what kind of Native culture are we? And especially in a complicated urban environment where you have scores of tribes represented and not the formal sovereignty of living in a Native nation. And so we come together and, you know, we have these, are we a shunning culture here? You know, are we a reconciling and healing culture? Both are legitimate Native approaches. What do we want to be? How do we want to do it? And again, going to this generational thing, I see this in a lot of the younger people in the community, the younger emerging leadership, where they're more comfortable with this idea of lifting up issues that need to be addressed to hold ourselves accountable. And I like it.
I love it. And I think too, Robert, that, you know, we talk about these things that have happened to us in boarding school. I really feel like personally for me, my family has lost two generations. Mm-hmm. And part of the renaissance with our young ones and wanting to learn and feel strong about doing things in a good way has really... it hasn't affected this generation as much as possibly my parents and my grandparents.
I think that's right. Right. So my dad was raised by someone who was a victim of the boarding school system and who was taught to despise our language and culture and ridicule it. And that's the environment my dad was raised in. And then as he aged, he became really an important part of the Ojibwe language reclamation here, movement here in the 70s and 80s, 90s. He would go to many language tables and just start to reclaim the language. But it's a journey. You have to bridge that, right? Bridge that deliberate disruption in culture that was very effective. You know, those boarding schools where they beat people's children's language and cultures out of them. They knew what they were doing.
Right.
And they made people fearful of re-embracing their culture. And so get through us, you know, and get to the next generations. And they have less of that fear. Mm-hmm. Their influences are some of our founders, as I call them, people like Clyde Belcour, Laura Waterman, all these folks who are walking on now. But so we're having generational strength that's being built. And I was just talking about this today with these documentary filmmakers, and, you know, because it's current, you know, there's kind of a trend in circles in conversations I'm in where people don't want to talk about historical trauma because it's not historical. It is current. It is in our lives every day. And so they feel like the term historical maybe gives us a little bit of buffering or comfort, and we shouldn't be comfortable with it. And just talking about how I can see from our place, we're about the same age, you know, in the generational trajectory, just how deep it feels, because that trauma is real and it's there every day. But if you look at it historically, it's not really that long. You know, and here in Minnesota, it's maybe 150, 200 years. In this country, it's maybe 500 years. Yeah, that's a long time, but it's not forever. Right. Our people have been here for millennia and we are still here. And so I'm starting to get to this place where I think that it might be possible to get beyond that trauma that we're feeling. It's not as deep as it feels.
Well, it's so funny. We always joked, and I don't mind repeating what we've talked about in the past because I think it's really poignant, and also we have new listeners all the time. But, you know, when in 1978, you talk about school and all these Indians came out of the woodwork in your school when, right. that you know, they were recognizing Native Americans in your school. I grew up with Ho-Chunks. I always knew I was Winnebago. From being adopted, and I had no idea until, 10 years ago that they're Ho-Chunk, that these kids.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that was my experience, right? I've shared that story before. I graduated from high school in 1978 from a large suburban school here in the Twin Cities, 720 people in my class, just because it was 1978 and there was more awareness and important pieces of legislation were being passed in D.C. Around education, Native education, Native culture, Native religion, religious practices. So suddenly there was an awareness. And at my high school, they hosted a lunch for the Native graduates. And they must have got our names off of tribal enrollment, tribal roles. And so there's 12 of us that they could identify out of this class of 720 people. And these are people, many of them, that I had gone through school with from kindergarten to senior year and never knew they were Native. We, and some of you'd look at them and you'd go, oh, yeah, of course you're Indian, How did I not know that? But we had disincentive for self-identifying as Native, right? It was riskier to identify as Native. And so it wasn't until this event that we finally did that. And now it's hard to imagine that even happening in a public school here in Minnesota anyway.
Right.
Young students are proud. They're expressing their culture. And it's a very different thing in our lifetimes. Right?
Yeah.
A fairly short amount of time.
And that's why I brought that up because of what you were saying that, how far we've come and that the bright the light at the end of the tunnel is not an oncoming train. There are good things happening, and maybe 10, 15 years ago, we didn't feel that way. Hey, I'm here with Robert Lilligren, and we're doing a whole show together, White Earth Citizen. We'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us. Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
When it comes to mental health, making connections with others can be a way forward. How do you reach out when you need someone? What do you do to support those who struggle? Connections can bring comfort, hope, and joy. Find ways that work for yourself and others, like sending a text, sharing a moment, offering a hug, seeing an old friend, creating space to listen. Visit cmentalhealth.org. That's cmentalhealth.org. cmentalhealth.org.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Hey, this is Robert Pilot. I taught in St. Paul Public Schools for over 25 years, and I want you to join the team and make a difference in our children's future. Right now, St. Paul Public Schools is offering hiring and retention bonuses up to $10,000 for a variety of teaching and classroom support positions for the next school year. Grow in a supportive and fulfilling public school setting. Limited bonuses are available, so don't delay. Apply at spps.org/careers.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, and Robert always cracks me up to hear every time I hear Dallas Goldtooth do that for us. He was a guest, and I asked him to do a radio tag, and I didn't expect him to do that, what he did. I just thought he'd say, hey, this is Dallas Goldtooth, the Reservation Dogs, and but he did it in character. I still laugh when I hear it.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, and speaking of the Renaissance, there's those guys, you know, Bobby Wilson was on the show a couple times, and we always have to be careful with the dump button because Bobby likes to swear on live radio, but I've known Bobby as a kid at Harding, and, he wrote one of the shows. He's a writer on Reservation Dogs, and he was on, and he does some spot acting too for them. And he was on, he was a writer on Rutherford Falls too. But he did the whole piece, and I don't know if it was familiar to you. He wrote that whole piece when Cheese was put into a home because for years he worked. Well, first he was in Enda Young, and then he worked for Enda Young, sure. And that's how he met Dallas Goldtooth.
Ah, interesting. I did not know that. And so Enda Young is a place in St. Paul that provides housing for homeless Native youth, and which is there's not a lot of that kind of housing going on, and so they're just incredibly important here. And so no, I didn't know that. I did know because he used to hang around here more, you know, along the cultural corridor and things, and he's just a fascinating person, and you know, very respectful to me anyway as an elder and stuff. And I learned that he was actually born in a house in the Phillips area, not far from Franklin Avenue. And
are you speaking of Bobby? Are you speaking of Bobby or Dallas?
Bobby.
Okay, cool.
Bobby Wilson. Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have been clear. But I thought he's a young man, you know. And I thought not that many people his age were probably born at home in the middle of the Phillips neighborhood, you know. So
I hadn't, you know, what was that show on Comedy Central? It's still on. What's the new show I'm thinking of on Comedy Central?
The Daily Show.
They did this this piece, and I hadn't seen Bobby in years since he was a student, and I knew he was in the comedy troupe, and he'd come back and MC for things, and I mean, I talked to him for just a short time, but this was like, I want to say 2015, 16, 14, somewhere around there, and he was on the Daily Show was interviewing these people about the Washington football name at the time.
Right.
And they were going, oh, you know, it's honoring them and it's all this. And then all of a sudden what, you know, the Daily Show does, a wall opened up and all these natives came out and Bobby was one of them. Right.
I remember that episode. I was watching it.
I go, that's Bobby Wilson.
Right. And those, Bobby Wilson and them, they were all kind of, you know, stone faced, and it really changed the discussion. You know,
that was
group, right? The 1491s, is that it was something.
Yeah, and that's got them going on Reservation Dogs. That's the same four people. And if people don't know out there, Google it or go to YouTube and watch the 1491ers, and they're hilarious, and there's a lot of inside jokes and some parodies, and that really brought them to this place where they're at now nationally, and speaking our truth and making fun of ourselves. I always say, Robert, it's kind of watching the Flintstones. You know, the adults would get one version of the Flintstones and the kids would get the other, you know, with the inside jokes. Right, and that's Reservation Dogs for us too. It's like, oh, this is funny. This is for everybody. I mean, there's some inside jokes.
Non-native folks are getting the joke, right?
Well, most people I talk to really love that show that are non-natives. So that's really, really good to hear. And they're, you know, going to be coming in August. I think the first week of August is that their season 3 is coming up for Reservation Dogs.
Exciting.
Can you believe it's 3 years? Oh, I mean,
no, I can't. That's amazing. And it's just, it shows that sustainability, right? People are interested in these stories now in a way they weren't before, Native and non-Native people. And it makes Native people contemporary, right? And up until a few years, I remember this research that went into creating Reclaiming Native Truth Strategies, you know, the narrative change strategies. It was almost, the research showed that almost half the people in the United States did not know that Native people still existed today.
Whoa.
The Native people were relegated to history, right?
So
that's interesting. But the really the kind of asset there was that like 80% of American people wanted to know more about Native people. And so that's where, you know, reservation dogs and all this media, the, you know, the movies coming out, the red carpets and things, people are really interested.
Right. Tommy Orange was on our show when his book first came out there. And he had said it taken him quite a few years to write that book. And that because of Standing Rock, he had a voice and people were really paying attention. So I thought that was really interesting. Go ahead.
I agree. And that's a book I recommend. You know, I get to address a lot of non-Native groups, you know, speak to them and things. And that's a book that I recommend as a resource. And for me, you know, he's a different generation than us. But he talks about the urban Indian experience in a way that really resonated with me. It felt like, yeah, this is like my experience.
Wow.
And I like that he uses the term urban Indian and helps move that into common vocabulary. It's an identity that that many of us are kind of working to define. And is that Decolonizing Wealth by Will and Wave? He's another one. He uses the term urban Indian.
Wow.
I like that. And so when I'm talking to non-Native groups, I'll describe myself as a third generation Minneapolis urban Indian.
Yeah.
And then give them permission to use that term, urban Indian. You know, people are never quite sure what they can and can't say.
Right, exactly. Hey, I was, what was it, 2 days ago, I was on Franklin Avenue. I didn't make your, I was at a big meeting downtown St. Paul, so I feel bad I didn't make your open house. But what I was able to do 2 days ago is to go in and see that great show you have at All My Relations Gallery, the beautiful beadwork, and I could have just stayed there in hours and looking at this. This stuff, and it was regalia, you know, just male regalia and
creatable words. I mean, it all has kind of a contemporary angle. So the show is called Pitwewetam, Making is Medicine, and it's a traveling exhibit. It came down from Thunder Bay. And it is the story of a family that suffered a great loss, a tragic, traumatizing loss. And to deal with that loss, they started to create.
Wow. You know?
And so the show is an outcome of the work that they did. And I will tell you, Robert, we get a lot of positive feedbacks about all of the shows we do in our All My Relations Arts Gallery. That we've never had any response like this. This is by far the most positive response that we've gotten from any show. So if you're in the cities, I urge you to come down to All My Relations Arts Gallery on the American Indian Cultural Corridor. Pitwewetam is up till June 10th, and it is awe-inspiring.
Wow, great plug, and it is. It really is. Robert, thank you so much for hanging in there with the whole show together. I had a great time.
I'm losing my voice a little.
Uh-oh. Hey, if you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance from Chief Plenty Coops. The ground in which we stand on is sacred ground. It's the blood of our ancestors. We need to...
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM, WGBW. Here's what's going on around the area. Stop and see the spring blooms at the garden. The Green Bay Botanical Gardens want you to see all the blooms throughout the gardens, 350,000 of them, in fact. They await you now through May 31st. On May 27th through the 29th, celebrate to pier at Voyager Park. There'll be music, food, kids area, and of course, fireworks. And don't forget the Memorial Day Parade, all happening in De Pere. And on May 27th, the Green Bay Farmers Market takes place in downtown Green Bay. Visitors can experience a host of fresh, locally grown produce. It's all going on from 9 until 11:30 a.m. If you have an event you'd like us to tell others about, we'd love to help you out. Email it to info@civicmedia.us. We are the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC.